you go. Right of choice of MyNorthWest.com. Text as well at 98973. Text to the State Roofing text line 98973. All right. So news comes down off the phone. It says in here that the jury, I guess at this point, both the prosecution and the defense have rested for the first day. 15 members of the jury. There's 12 that seat, two alternates, and then one extra. And there they were in Minneapolis. And you get an opportunity to hear from the both the defense and the prosecutor. Prosecutor goes first. And if this seems the case, from what I'd seen in the Wall Street Journal, Tom, this morning, this is going to be the jury. What will be the most compelling? Will it be the video? Or will it be the autopsy? So it'll say, the prosecution will say, here's the video, you can see what happened, and then it's going to be up to the defense to be able to say, yes, that's the video, but understand what was happening internally to George Floyd. So you can see how they're laying this sort of thing out right now. We have some sound from it, and we're going to go first to, this is the prosecutor, this is Jerry Black.
These are the opening statements.
Opening statements.
You will learn that on May 25th of 2020, Mr. Derek Chauvin betrayed this badge when he used excessive and unreasonable force upon the body of Mr. George Floyd, that he put his knees upon his neck and his back, grinding and crushing him until the very breath, no, ladies and gentlemen, until the very life was squeezed out of him. You will learn that he was well aware that Mr. Floyd was unarmed, that Mr. Floyd had not threatened anyone, that Mr. Floyd was in handcuffs, he was completely in the control of the police, he was defenseless. You will learn what happened in that 9 minutes and 29 seconds. The most important numbers you will hear in this trial are 9-2-9. What happened in those 9 minutes and 29 seconds when Mr. Derek Chauvin was applying this excessive force to the body of Mr. George Floyd.
Okay, so the 9-2-9 is the video. We'll show it over and over again. They'll get into the 3 minutes when he was non-responsive.
Yes. Yeah, they show the entire video on this first day.
Yeah, they'll keep doing it. And then the defense is going to say, wait.
The evidence is far greater than 9 minutes and 29 seconds. In this case, you will learn that the evidence has been collected broadly and expansively. Minnesota Bureau of Criminal Apprehension employed nearly 50 case agents, analysts, and technicians to investigate this case. The Federal Bureau of Investigation included at least 28 additional agents in their investigation. And in the end, you will hear a term throughout, I believe, this case called the bait stamp number. The bait stamp system is a way for lawyers to keep track of the case, to make sure that we are working from the same set of documents, the same set of evidence, to preserve the integrity of the investigation. You will learn that we are approaching 50,000 bait stamped items. So this case is clearly more than about 9 minutes and 29 seconds.
Okay, there you go. Two smart guys laying it out. One's a video. It's 9 minutes and 29 seconds. That's what you need to know. The other guy's saying, no, it's 50,000 pieces of evidence that you're going to need to know about. Okay.
And is that video just one? Huh? I would assume that of those 50,000, there'll be a lot of them that are included in that 9 minutes and 29 seconds, right?
yeah, from people that were nearby, the other officers, all that other stuff, right? But this guy's going to say, look, here's this. This is the autopsy. This is this. This is this. You know.
Yeah, the argument will be, since he had meth and fentanyl in his system, is that what killed him? Is it Chauvin's knee that killed him? Is it a combination of the both?
Right.
That's what the jury's going to be deciding on. Now, do we have any audio from any of the three people that testified today? Or
we do. No? They're being charged with. He's got second degree, which is the unintentional cause of Mr. Floyd's death, and then third degree murder, which is defined as imminent dangerous act with depraved mind. So those are the two. He could serve anywhere between. Maxim is more than this, but he could do 128 to 180 months. That would be for both charges.
Yeah, but you left off second-degree manslaughter, too. So there's second-degree murder, third-degree murder, and second-degree manslaughter.
Yeah. So altogether, he's going to do, if he got them both in there, there would be 180, or the max could be more. Okay, so then we do have some points. Do you have anything from anybody else that was there other than the two?
No, I just grabbed the opening statements. They go back and forth on the cause of death and both making arguments on what they
think. Yeah, and then talking about what was in his system and things like that, Tom. So thanks for putting Jake up on the spot.
Well, this is late breaking. I just heard this on CBS. So one interesting thing that they threw in. So I saw early on they talked about the dispatcher, and the dispatcher could actually see on the video camera that she thought that what was happening bothered her. She called a sergeant and all. I mean, again, this is, we are now hearing all on one side of the case.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
But the third person who testified today, to me, was the most, I hadn't heard any of this before, that he was just a witness. He says that he is a mixed martial arts guy, and that he recognized that what he was doing is something that they know because of his mixed martial arts training as a blood choke that can render an opponent unconscious. And I thought, and they said, well, and so did you say that to Chauvin? And he said, I did. And Chauvin looked me sort of like dead in the eye, and that was it.
Yeah.
Now, that doesn't prove anything, but it is interesting. I hadn't heard that somebody actually thought he could see what was happening to George Floyd based on his own mixed martial arts. And again, this is a witness for the prosecution that we heard from.
Right. Okay. So then they're going to be able to. And the other part of it is interesting, I think, is there's two autopsies. There's one hired by the family, and you got that guy. Then you have the one from Halperin County or whatever the other. Then you have that one. So one is the one, and the FBI looked at it, and that those are those numbers, and that's all the statistics on what was happening in his blood and his lungs and all the other stuff. And then you have the other guy on the other side. So it's going to be these two medical examiners, one from the county, and then one hired by the attorney. Then you have to get into, well, I don't trust the government, but I trust the attorney for these people, right? So then it gets into whose medical examiner do you believe is telling you the truth? Because both of them there's a couple of interesting pieces. One, he says, I see no bruising, no damage done to his esophagus, nothing to obstruct the airways. I didn't see what would be standard. That's what the county says. The other guy's, no. All sorts of problems over here when it came to compression upon his windpipe and other problems. Mm-hmm. So you're going to get those two bits of pieces that'll fly back and forth on it. The other part of it is they threw some people out when they came to the jury when they said, does it affect your decision when you find out that the family has now gotten $27 million?
Yeah.
Because you would figure somebody sitting there going, $27 million is a lot. You know, I guess they kind of got justice, right? So let's give them $27 million and then let this guy go. I mean, it would certainly affect, knowing that it would affect how the jury would feel about the entirety of the case.
However, John, that's interesting that that's the spin you can imagine, because I thought I saw it spun the other way, that they thought that once they heard that the city had settled for $27 million, holy smokes, he must have really done something bad.
Uh-huh.
So they were dismissed from the jury, and the hunch was that they might have been more sympathetic to the prosecution.
Mm-hmm.
But again, and that's the great thing about jury selection, or the horrible thing about jury selection, you never know which way people are leaning. But the hunch was that might have hurt the prosecution's case when they had to let those people go, because they admitted, I think that's going to prejudice my take.
Yeah.
It's hard enough to find enough people that didn't know, or at least were convincing enough that they hadn't made it up into their mind about the George Floyd, Derek Chauvin case. Mm-hmm. And then to have to lose two of them after all of this selection felt like a blow, but they're carrying on and they have 15 people.
I would not, even if I could sit there and answer those questions and say, I could tell you how I feel about it, I would pass on it. I would throw something into the wrench to monkey wrench it out so I wouldn't be chosen, because I don't want to be on that trial.
I know. And why not?
Because I don't want to be killed. I don't want my house to be set on fire. I don't want to be whipped up in it. I said this on the air a couple of weeks ago, that I believe the Marxist organization, Black Lives Matter, wants him to be found not guilty, because you do so much more for the organization and its fundraising to find and to be able to continue to say, see, no justice, no peace. It gives people reason to riot and it gives people political platforms. But I wouldn't want to be on. Would you want to be on that jury, Tom?
That's really interesting. I really trust myself. I think I am a really fair guy, and I know people that disagree with me politically may not feel that way. I think I'm a really fair guy,
I've known you for a long time.
Yeah.
I would sit I would love to be on to have you on any jury if I'm sitting there and they've charged me
with
a crime.
As the accused?
Yeah, because I do believe you really do weigh it all. You have done jury duty before.
Yes, I have.
And you've sat there, you've looked at all the evidence, and you sort of analyze it all, and you analyze how other people on the jury are behaving and things. I highly recommend, you can think Tom's a big, crazy liberal, but you want him on that jury. I would choose you in an instant. I say, I wouldn't want to be on it because I don't want my house burned down.
I know. Well, the thing is, John, so having said that, and I mean, I do think I'm fair in my own mind, and it's a real compliment to hear you say that. However, I do not want to be on a jury that's probably going to be written up in the history books, I think.
Yeah.
I think there's too much. The problem with the way a jury should be is the jury should be focused entirely and strictly and only on this case. And yet, I don't know how this is going to break out, to tell you the truth. Mm-hmm. But it's like, if this is one of those things where anybody and everybody on the jury is going to be sociologized and psychoanalyzed and everything else, it's like, wow, I think it actually might be better to have people who are more oblivious to the way the world works than someone like us. We are so attuned to what anything and everything means politically and socially and, you know, just in terms of news and all that. I think it would be a tremendous burden. I do think that I would finally take it on.
You want to get somebody just falling off the back of a hay truck, Tom? What are you talking about? The what? Now, who the hay? Now, he did what to him? Hold on. So he knelt on him? Now, what's this guy's name? Oh,
I don't know. On the jury that I was on, I ended up being the lone holdout, and was the most fascinating thing to me, or one of the fascinating things was, the lawyer, they bring in the lawyers and they kind of talk to you. Okay, so what were the kinds of issues that were brought up? Why did you do this? And I remember asking the prosecuting attorney, because when he was asking me questions about how I felt about this or about that, because we didn't know what the case was about, it turned out that the answers I gave probably would indicate that I might move in the opposite direction from what this prosecutor had. And so I asked him, why did you put me on the jury? Mm-hmm. And he says, because all we really want as lawyers is somebody who would listen to the evidence.
Yes.
And you clearly would listen to the evidence. You
and I thought, and then that's a five-part question and a follow-up. I have no idea. We have a commercial break.
I was just mad that he didn't let me grill the people that were testifying. I wanted to be the lawyer. But anyway, I do think that that's the strength
of
the system.
Now, were you also, did you become the foreman?
Well, that's what's so fascinating about it. I was elected the foreman, and I declined to agree to it.
I knew they would elect you.
Why, though? I mean, it's you're meeting five other people, you know, that you've never met before kind of thing. And it's like, I don't know. But, yeah, and I declined because I wanted to be – when you're the foreman, it's kind of like you have to be the host. And I wanted to be willing to make my case without – sensing that, I'm the authority figure here, so I really shouldn't, you know, interject.
But yeah.
Anyway, it's a fascinating experience. I'd recommend it to everybody.
My beloved Aunt Mary, who taught fourth grade for 36 years, when she retired, she served on more juries, and she would always be the foreman. It wasn't as she wanted to be, she was very, very articulate, and just she has great strength, and she was just, you could tell she just do really, really, because, you know, she's used to standing up in front of a bunch of fourth graders for all those years.
Sure.
Okay, so she would always be chosen, and I said, Mayor, like, what? How was the last case you had on? She goes, it was so obvious. This is so sweet. This is like a Philadelphia thing. She goes, and such an Aunt Mayor thing. She goes, it was so obvious that the guy was guilty. And I said, what did you do? She goes, you know, we were done in like 6 minutes in the back on the vote. So what I said is, we're going to adjourn for lunch. And then we had everybody bring hoagies in. So at least we could all sit and eat our hoagies, which took about 45 minutes. So the guy felt at least we were deliberating for an hour. When really we had finished it in 6 minutes. Then we sat back there and I said, okay, has everyone had enough to eat? We've got another bag of chips here. And then everybody finished everything. She goes, okay, let's go out. And they went out there and they sat down. And then, you know, ladies and gentlemen, the jury, have you reached a verdict? She goes, because I just didn't want that guy to think that we went in, did this, and came back out again. So often she would order lunch to slow the process down because they were about to make the, you know, they're going to find rule against this guy. Mm-hmm. And it's bad enough to rule against him. And then to sort of, you know, and everybody likes a sandwich at 10:30 in the morning.
Yeah, I love that a jury is concerned about the PR, the look, you know. We have to show that we respected this guy's case enough that we heard it out, even though they didn't.
Well, I don't know how often that happens. Yeah. That was Mayer in the hoagie verdict. So that's how she did that. All right. And again, anybody out there, you can write to us at mynorthwest.com. Text as well, 98973. Come on in, and you can be... Tom, you'd want Tom on the jury. Oh, by the way, the 9-7, what the guys say, the big numbers you're going to hear is 9-something-9. They want all
9 minutes and 29 seconds.
Yeah, so you see race baiter Al Sharpton is up there. He's wearing a mask on. That they have those masks now. So that's going to be the big, they're going to try to make that a hashtag. So
9-29? Well, what's interesting is, you know, all summer, John, it was 8:46. They've extended. I don't know how they miscounted or they got more video or something. So it went from 8:46 to 9:29.
Mm, okay.
Numbers change.
There it is. So, boy. Al's up there with his mask on. You can try to make some money off of this. All right, Tracy Taylor. I got so excited to know about the seminar that's coming up, Tom, when it comes to if you're over 50 and LASIK's not an option for you. I forgot to tell you how to sign up. That's not right. K2 Vision. Go to K2 Vision. You can find out more. This is coming up. And by the way, what I love about this on the 1st of April, it's at noon. So you missed Dory's show, but you get a chance to. Because he has so many seminars that he's like involved
in. Two for one.
Sign up and learn how to keep rats out of your house at 3 o'clock. I'm like,
I know. You notice it's always, it's always during our show.
Yes. Yeah, so you know what? K2 Vision, if you're over 50 and LASIK's not right for you, RLE, find out more about it, and we'll all go there together and get that done. It only takes like 5 minutes. It's great. All right. Also, Keel Mortgage. You be able to get yourself the best mortgage business in the world. Get the people working with you over at Keel Mortgage, especially today in a highly competitive market. Make sure it's Keel Mortgage that you're getting in touch with. Everybody there cares desperately about your mortgage. 1-888-778-KIEL. Just to verify, Tom. You weren't here when I did this with Sean, where I just said 10 numbers. I said 7 numbers at random, and that's when Sean corrected me. Well, actually, it's 10. So he did. He did it one other time. We had this Hispanic guy. I think he got like every fifth word, but it was generally a good, fast poll, right?
Yeah, Jose.
Jose. In this case, it was another 10 numbers at random. Sean dials him. Bang. Person comes on, agrees to come on the radio, and there you go. Just like that. And then, by the way, whoever that is, they have the definitive. They've got the last word. And I think they said 90%.
See, I'm just spoiled because I always used to work at a news station. So we didn't do these kind of radio stunts that had nothing to do with reality. But now that I'm doing the show with you, I get it.
Tom, how long? This is not new. How long have you been doing this for?
8 years.
These stunts have been paying your bills for 8 years. Prince William crowned. This is wrong. Dial 10 numbers at random, Sean. There's no way this guy is the sexiest person.
911, 911.
No, don't dial any numbers. Hang on. Prince William crowned world's sexiest bald man. No. Did they give people choices or they just came up with this? They must have said
this.
They had to say that you have choices, right?
This is no more accurate than calling somebody at random any 10 numbers that come up. But still, what this report did from The Sun is they looked at the internet, basically. They looked at all they used Google to reference how many times, Google data, how many times Prince William, who happens to be bald, apparently, was called what? Sexy.
You don't even give him that, do you? You have him receding severely.
Yes,
you don't give him bald yet.
He looks like he's got a little fuzz still. I wouldn't consider him. I mean, he's at the point now where most people just go ahead and shave it. Now, I can't tell you I'm really that up on the royal family, but because of the dust-up with Oprah and Meghan Markle, I think I've seen him more in the news. I don't think of him as a bald guy because it doesn't look like he shaves his head, but maybe he does. I'll grant him that, but he certainly doesn't seem sexy to me. But apparently, on the internet, he has been referenced as sexy 17.6 million times in blogs, articles, web pages. And so it's just a number count.
Oh.
And you know who came in number two?
No.
Mike Tyson. Huh. With 8.8 million sexy internet adjectives, and then Jason Statham with 7.4 million. Now, what's funny about this is, and this story is, it's ridiculous on the face of it, but there has been a real strong social media pushback from Stanley Tucci fans. I don't know, you know who Stanley Tucci is, John?
He's getting a lot of pushback.
Well, he is a very dashing bald guy. I think he's late 50s, maybe. He might have turned 60 now. I'm watching. He has a series on CNN called Stanley Tucci, walking through Italy. And it's basically a food show. And he goes to all 27 or 28 counties or something in Italy. He's very popular. He's a really good actor. Been in dozens of things, or more than that, I'm sure. And so a lot of people are writing in, what are you talking about, that he might be considered more traditionally sexy? But they also point out Bruce Willis, The Rock, or Dwayne Johnson.
How does Prince William, with his equine-like teeth, beat The Rock? Why doesn't The Rock win?
Well, here's what I think it is. It's the number of times. And so my guess is, as popular as The Rock is, my guess is the kind of gossip trail that follows the royal family, my hunch is there were a lot more references to Prince William. Uh-huh. And then since sexy, he might have been referenced 100 million times and 17 million of those might have mentioned he's sexy. Mm-hmm. There may be fewer references to Dwayne The Rock, but I bet a higher percentage would, say sexy, in them. So this is, we're willing to kick this around and debate it. Who do you think is the sexiest bald man?
Me. Yeah. I
Yul Brynner, I'm sure that's what you meant.
I was going to about 6 years ago, I was going to go the Bruce Willis way because my bald spots are, and I thought, I'm going to shave my head because he shaves his head. And a friend of mine who is an artist, a graphic designer, so he goes, you want to see what you're going to look like bald? And he click, click, click. And then I was like, oh, my God. He goes, I'm not so good. And I said,
really?
Yeah. He goes, you see the shape of your face because you wear your jaws and stuff. And then your head is kind of coming to a point like that. I was like, did you do anything else to it? He goes, no, that's there. I just took your hair away and I filled in. And yeah, that's like a thing. That's what you'd look like. And I was like, ugh. Because I thought if I looked like Bruce Willis, I'd be okay with it.
Yeah,
and then I thought, okay, well, now I got to get a series of baseball hats. And then you get the series of baseball hats, which you put in the back window of your car, and the sun beats them down, and they all kind of fade in different ways.
Yeah.
So that was my next move, until the FUE treatment, Tom, which is the most advanced. And then I moved the hair around, and boom, bang, I got rid of it. But no, once I looked at the picture of me, I was like, ugh, no way.
See, it never occurred to me that, that some people just wouldn't look good bald. I figured if they didn't look good bald, they probably didn't look good with their hair either. It's interesting to think that you could actually look worse or better depending on the shape of your
head. I don't want to say his name on the air, but he used to work here. And then he said to me one time, a friend told me, you're better off firing them before they all quit, meaning meaning your hair.
Right.
And then he went ahead and shaved his head. And it didn't work.
Did you ever tell him?
I looked at it. He could tell the way I was looking at him. He'd catch me staring, shaking
That's
my head.
Funny.
Not, you know what I'm talking about, right?
Well, I've got a couple of guys in mind.
Okay, moving on. Tracy Taylor?
Yeah.
You're married. You have a husband with a full head of hair?
I do.
If he went bald,
and he does.
If he went bald or started to go bald, would you be like, that's it. I did not marry a bald man.
Never. Uh-uh.
You all right with it?
I'm totally fine with it.
Okay. Do you know who Advanced Hair is? They're a sponsor. Spends hundreds of thousands of dollars a year here at Cairo? Happen to ring any bells?
Yeah, I do. Uh-huh.
I'll just say this. Paula, when I was married to Paula and we were living in Chicago, outside of Chicago, in Champaign-Urbana, the guy that came up with whatever that hair product was in the 80s, he was in Chicago. Rogaine.
Hair in a can?
No. Rogaine. Rogaine.
Oh,
we
Rogaine.
We drove all the way from Champaign-Urbana to this guy's place in Chicago because she said, I did not marry a bald man. And we drove all the way up there, 4 hours. I sat in his waiting room. He walks in and goes, which one of you's got the bald, which one has got the hair problem? And I said, I've got the hair. She has a problem with it. He spent 2 seconds going over my hair. And he goes, you're fine. $400. $400.
Wow. Wow.
Now, what he said is, you're fine.
Okay. Why do you do that?
Yeah.
Why do you have to do that? Why Tom
yeah,
does that with
like
everything
that.
Now? All right. Mm-hmm. Tracy Taylor. Here we go with the Tom and Curly Show. There's Tom over there. I'm here. There's Jacob and Sean in the other room. You write to us at buynorthwest.com. We do love to hear from you. I was asking my son, who is like Mr. Pilot guy. He's very close to getting his license, Tom. I said, did you hear about that pilot and the problem with the mic? And he goes, yeah. So that, I said, what happened? He goes, that jet is like 15 years old. Southwest flies this thing. And what will happen is when you key your mic to talk to the tower, sometimes it'll get stuck. So that's what happened.
So
he probably called tower, asked for something. I guess he's taking off. Probably told him or he talked to tower, and then maybe he was told to hold or something like that. And then so the microphone is stuck open.
Okay. Yeah. And so what we have is a hot mic, and we understand the inner workings of this man's rage.
As we say in television, the mic is always hot. A lesson for an unidentified Southwest Airlines pilot clearly peeved at the Bay Area.
Yeah, God, liberal.
While taxiing for departure at Mineta San Jose International Airport last week, he took shots at the region with generalizations from guns to cars.
Weirdos. Probably driving around in Hyundais.
Okay, let me ask this. So, weirdos driving Hyundais? I mean, come on. You can't think of a better car? And why not Priuses? Why is he going to do Hyundais? Hyundais have a lot of nice models, and they're not just doing... We do cars for weirdos. That's not what Hyundai's is all about.
At one point, someone even tried to get his attention.
Calling on tower, that's 124.0, hot mic.
While his tirade wasn't broadcast to passengers, travelers say the audio is concerning.
I think I'd maybe be worried that he was drunk or...
Ugh. All right, Tom, this thing you hate. Hey, what's it? Karen, go out there and do that story on the mic on the guy and the plane and thing, and you know, then go ask people what they think.
Yeah,
right?
The MOS stuff.
Yeah,
you know,
man
on the street. Or it's lazy journalism.
Yeah, AAI. Ask any idiot.
I don't know. Out of his mind, maybe.
I think it's a good thing that the aircraft did not hear that.
Oh, you think?
Because I would be very scared. To hear a pilot saying that, especially with everything that's been going on.
And I drive a Hyundai.
Councilman Raul Perales, whose district encompasses downtown San Jose and the airport, calls the comments disheartening, especially coming from a pilot with the city's largest air carrier.
It's one thing to be hearing people's authentic opinions. I think they're entitled to, again, those opinions. I think in this case, this person is completely generalizing and completely wrong.
Southwest Airlines says the comments made by the pilot are inconsistent with company culture. They plan to deal with the matter internally. The FAA says its regulations actually prohibit pilots from talking about anything other than safely conducting their flight while taxiing and while flying below 10,000 feet altitude.
Yeah, okay, he didn't know.
That
he
last
was
thing is interesting.
There. Well, the mic was stuck. It wasn't like he was calling the tower and saying all this stuff. Like the politician. Yeah, he was generalizing. No, kidding. You wanted to be more specific?
Yeah. But, I understand that in this world, there are a lot of people that may be privately jerks, but as long as they do their job and it doesn't impact me negatively, that's okay. I mean, I'm a huge football fan, and I'm sure that the football coach may be, you know, his politics are a lot more conservative than I am. But as long as he's a, you know, good coach, I think that that's what matters. It did. The one thing I will credit that one of the guys said, well, you didn't know if he might have been drunk or a little, you know, off out of his mind.
No.
That is one concern about pilots, is that if they've dropped their inhibitions low enough that they're willing to say this publicly. But you're right. He didn't realize that he was saying it publicly. So then the question is, does his co-pilot know, oh, this is the way Jim always is, and so there's nothing unusual? Or is this Jim on some kind of, you know, verbal bender, and is that reason for concern? But otherwise, as long as he's got a record, Southwest is embarrassed, and I'm sure they will handle it internally, but I don't think that this means that he should never be able to fly again.
No, he's just talking into the, this thing got stuck, that's all. Rye yesterday, or a week ago, was flying, coming out of Boeing, and Cessna 172, Alpha 9 or whatever, and they're like, hold for something or other security. And then he goes, we're holding. So he had a hold. He's going to make a left-hand turn and take off. And they told him to hold for. Then he looks ahead. And it was a Global. I think Global 1000 was the jet. I think that's the number he told me, which is Jeff Bezos' jet, which is like the most expensive jet. And I was like, so you had a hold for him? He goes, yeah, because they need a secure barrier. So you have a longer distance between that jet in front of you and you.
Normally, like Air Force One.
Yeah, normally there's a, I don't know how many feet it is, your yards, whatever. So they had him hold and wait until Bezos's jet took off. And I said, oh, you know what? I would have screw on that. Why does he get special treatment?
That's why you're not a pilot.